Welcome to Left Out with Adam Grimm and Logan Davis, a weekly show where we discuss all things sports, from the controversial to lighthearted topics around the country. Now let's go to the host. This is Left Out.
What's up, sports fans? It's Logan Davis.
And I'm Adam Grimm, recording from the Eagles front office.
It's January 23rd, and welcome to Episode 7. Make sure to follow us or subscribe on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter as well, at Left Out Official.
Today, we preview the conference championship games in the NFL, take a deeper look at the directions that the Philadelphia Eagles should be headed in, and even have our first guest interview on the show. But first, it's time to talk about some breaking news about a retirement in the NFL.
Let the game begin.
It's time to get this week started with the tip-off.
As Adam said before, we have some breaking news. A very important player in the NFL has retired, and his name is Vance McDonald the Vanimal. After 8 seasons in the league, he's decided to hang up the cleats for good. 4 years with the 49ers, 4 years with the Steelers. Just give you some career stats. 181 receptions, 2,036 yards, 15 touchdowns, and one nasty stiff arm. Adam, what do you think about this?
I mean, yeah, he's always going to be remembered as that guy who laid down the hammer on Monday Night Football with that stiff arm against the Bucks. Feel bad for one of our best friends, Aaron, who will no longer get to watch one of his favorite players play. But pretty awesome career with that, especially with that highlight there. Really good to see him moving on, though. Hopefully he finds happiness in retirement as well.
Absolutely. Hopefully, maybe even go to a broadcasting role. That'd be pretty cool to see the Vanimal on TV. That's all I'm saying. And that wraps up the tip-off. Adam now with the news.
Big news, sports fans!
Let's talk about the sports news from around the country.
Yeah, I know I'm not exactly the jockey type, but I watched Hoosiers last night, and I like sports now.
Here are the biggest stories in sports.
Starting this week off with some news in the NFL, headed to the conference championship game, some injury updates. Patrick Mahomes will be in on Sunday. He was dealing with concussion issues from a rather unfortunate play against the Browns the previous week, and Antonio Brown will be out for the Buccaneers against the Green Bay Packers.
Huge for the Chiefs, obviously. Patrick Mahomes being able to play would definitely help their odds of winning the game. Antonio Brown being out, I feel like, is not as huge for the Buccaneers, just with the amount of weapons they have, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Leonard Fournette, and then they could always plug in Scotty Miller for Antonio Brown's role. So I don't think it's the end of the world, but obviously sad to see.
Yeah, without Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs would not be winning this week. I think even with him, it's definitely going to be a close game, but obviously having back at least gives them a chance that they definitely would not have without him. And Antonio Brown, I think, may go a little bit more undercover than what people think, because if you look at Tom Brady, Chris Godwin has not been reliable for him so far. He sort of relied on Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski to be his safety blankets and get him those necessary catches whenever the Buccaneers need it. And now he's going to have to turn to guys like Mike Evans, who I still trust, but sometimes he'll have to go to a guy like Chris Godwin, who really hasn't really proved what he can do so far in the playoffs this year. So that's something to look at, I think. Now moving on to the NBA, Draymond Green on Thursday night lost to the Knicks. He received a technical foul for yelling at James Wiseman, which resulted in his ejection from the game, but the technical has since been later rescinded. Unfortunately, cannot take back ejecting him from that game.
Yeah, obviously Draymond in the past has gotten many technicals and has been kicked out of many games, but this was just kind of ridiculous. I watched the clip of it and just it made no sense at all. And James Wiseman's just been hearing it from Draymond Green all season, just trying to learn from him. But Draymond is definitely just yelling in his ear all the time, and you just see James Wiseman just kind of looking put out, just hearing and nodding and continuing to play. So officials got to figure that out, but obviously not a huge deal.
Draymond, he's a guy who's tough on his teammates just because I think that he wants the most out of them each and every night. He's going to be one of those guys who's going to push you to be your best. And I think that this shows it, but I also think that this just sums up sports officiating and what it seems to have come to over the last few years, where these officials sort of get into a power hungry state and they just make these absolutely ridiculous calls where it's something that's really not even related to the play of the game. And he decides to just send him out for the game. So really unfortunate that that had to happen for the Warriors, but hopefully they can move on and be into a good place. In Major League Baseball, we have some unfortunate news as Hank Aaron, at the age of 86, has died. The 25-time All-Star is the second all-time leader in home runs. He holds the records for RBIs and extra base hits, and he's also third all-time in hits.
Absolutely. Tragic news to hear. Obviously, he meant so much to the game of baseball, and the world is going to miss him. But yeah, he is one of the absolute all-time greats, if not even in the conversation of being one of the best of all time. So
yeah, I would consider him the best hitter of all time. And he's just an amazing figure in sports. Obviously, in his career, he battled against a lot of racism and hatred, even receiving death threats at the potential of him breaking Babe Ruth's home run record. But a great life for him, great career, and rest in peace, Hank Aaron. Now into college sports, turmoil has hit the University of Tennessee as head football coach Jeremy Pruitt and the athletic director were fired for some less than perfect football recruiting tactics that have come to the surface.
This is just embarrassing for Tennessee. I believe that they were giving recruits McDonald's bags with money in it.
Yes, yes.
And gosh, I mean, first of all, obviously it's not the right thing to do, but Tennessee's not even good. These poor recruiting efforts led to nothing. They're a very lackluster program this season in the past couple. And now whoever the next head football coach of Tennessee has to coach a team who's being investigated and now has a bad rap in everyone's mouth.
I'm just going to leave it at this one thing. If a mediocre team who's consistently losing is consistently getting the top 5-star guys in each class, there's probably something going on that just isn't adding up for the rest of it. And I think that that's something that we need to keep in mind heading forward if we were to see something like this again. But that is all the sports news that we have this week. Let's debate the direction of the Philadelphia Eagles.
It's showtime! And now, the main attraction.
This is what you've been waiting for. Our biggest discussion of the week.
Cool.
It's time for the main event.
As stated before, Logan and I are going to make the case on why the Eagles should rebuild or if they should retool. I will be arguing that they should retool and Logan will argue that they should rebuild. Logan, I always let you go first, but today I'm going first.
Okay.
The Eagles, it's time that they retool, not rebuild. They should not go full rebuild. Let me just give you a little bit of let me start off with Carson
Wentz.
Yeah,
no, let's hear it.
So Carson Wentz, as I stated last week, he experienced his most success under offensive coordinator Frank Reich. I think it's pretty clear now that Frank Reich was the reason that he was successful. And the head coach that they just hired obviously kept this in mind. They hired Nick Sirianni, who is the former offensive coordinator of the Indianapolis Colts under Frank Reich. And if you look at some of the things that the offense did under Nick Sirianni, you look at it and you see that their run game drastically improved over the course of the time that he was there. And I think that that's something that's going to help him. And you also have to look at, they're going to have a healthier offensive line than they did this year. They still have two stud tight ends. And if you just rebuild that receiving room, then I think that Carson Wentz can still be an effective quarterback in this league. I am still a believer in him.
Well, Adam, that was a great case for the retooling. However, I think the Eagles need to rebuild. And I think it comes down to the Wentz and Hurts dilemma. Obviously, you said the new coach obviously would help Wentz maybe come back and be a better quarterback. But I think Carson's time is over in Philadelphia. And I think it's time for Jalen Hurts to take over. He had a couple of great games the last few games of the season. And I also think that the NFC East is just a crapshoot right now. And if the Eagles are smart, they would rather rebuild now and be better later than keep trying to retooling and make a lackluster stint like the Washington football team did. And in addition, I also think that there's some key free agents that the Eagles need to either sign or let them walk. Specifically, I think Travis Fulgham is a huge receiver they should re-sign. He was their best receiver this season. And like you were saying, they have a very lackluster receiving core. So I think any other free agent signs would be critical. Kind of young guys specifically targeting. And I think also that the Eagles need to trade Zach Ertz and Jason Kelce. I think they just need to break down the Super Bowl winning group and just start young.
I mean, I just think that even if they just – I think they should just give it a shot this year. And even if you are bad, then you just rebuild from there. I think that this is one last year that they can try and give it a run with this core. And I mean, we haven't even touched on what they have defensively as well with one of the best pass rushers in the league in Fletcher Cox, and they have a true lockdown corner in Darius Slay as well. So, I mean, there's pieces all around this team. I think it's just, can someone bring them together, and can they recapture that winning form that they had a few seasons ago? And I think that that answer is yes, and I think that at least giving this season a shot is worth it.
And I think they also still need to rebuild because it would give them a chance for my Cowboys to get in the playoffs and win it all.
Of course you do.
But I think also a big thing just for both sides, rebuild and retooling. I think the Eagles really need to reinforce their running back depth chart. I think Miles Sanders is definitely your guy, but having some reinforcement, maybe re-signing Boston Scott or Corey Clement, I think this would be a good idea for either side. Make sure to comment who won this week's debate on Instagram at LeftOutOfficial. Now let's talk about what's happening on the gridiron and the hardwood.
Hello, you play to win the game.
These are the headlines from around the league and association.
It's a make or miss league, baby.
We move one step closer to Super Bowl 55 this week, and now we will take a close look at each of the two matchups in this week's conference championship games, featuring two rematches from Week 6's games. First up, we have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers facing off with the Green Bay Packers in Green Bay.
Yeah, obviously, I'm really excited to see this game. Obviously, you have the two great quarterbacks, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and I'm taking the Packers in this game. I just think even though the Buccaneers were able to stop Rodgers earlier in the regular season, he had his worst games against them, threw two or three picks, I believe, in one of the games, but I just think that they're just on a roll right now. And like I said last week, they just have so many weapons. Devontae Adams is the best receiver in the league. I don't think there's any debate about that. And he had a monster game with Jalen Ramsey being the primary defender on him last week. So I don't think the Bucs have anybody who can stop Devontae Adams. And I also think that Aaron Jones is going to have a huge day as well. Sad for Tom Brady and his Bucs, but I think this is where the road ends for you, Tom.
Yeah, last week against the New Orleans Saints, we saw Tom Brady continue his good play. But this week will be a different animal for him. It's obviously going to be much colder weather versus playing inside at the Superdome in New Orleans. So that's obviously going to have a huge impact on how this game plays out. And that really plays to the advantage of Aaron Rodgers, who always seems to step up in these freezing cold games and put together some of his best performances. But you also have to look at how improved this Green Bay Packers secondary has been, even since their week six matchup earlier on in the season. And so I think that that's going to make things tough on him. Aaron Rodgers is just continuing to wow week in and week out this year. He's really playing at a super high level outside of that obviously one really bad week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But I think that he will be able to figure it out. This offense is going to continue rolling like they have. And really it's going to come down to their defensive line. Guys like Za'Darius Smith, and seeing if they can make Tom Brady uncomfortable and see if they can do what other teams who have been successful against the Buccaneers have done, make him uncomfortable, force him into bad throws. And then I think that will give the Green Bay Packers the best chance to win, which I think that they will in a very close game. I have it as a toss-up. I think that the Packers win by 3 just because of the weather that will be in place at Lambeau Field. And now we have another Week 6 matchup, as I stated, the Buffalo Bills against the Kansas City Chiefs.
As we said earlier, Patrick Mahomes being cleared to play is huge for Kansas City. Obviously gives them a huge chance to win this game. I'm not putting my chips against Patrick Mahomes. I'm taking the Chiefs. I just think with Patrick Mahomes just has the X factor of being able to take over the game. And I think the Bills are going to, I think it's going to be a really close game. I said 27-24, but I think Buffalo's going to put up a fight. I think what they have going on right now has just been incredible. Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs have just been remarkable. And as we said multiple weeks, just their Buffalo defense has played a lot better. Kind of an ugly win, honestly, last week against Baltimore, but I think it's going to be a tight one for sure.
Yeah, we really saw that Bills offense slow down for the first time in a long time, I think. They've been absolutely rolling against whoever they've gone against, but last week against the Baltimore Ravens, they were only able to put up 10 points. 7 of their points came off of a pick 6. But I think that they can bounce back. I think that the Kansas City Chiefs do not have a defense to the level that the Baltimore Ravens do. So I think that they'll bounce back. But also, this will be the biggest test for the Bills secondary that has really improved so far this season. But obviously going against Patrick Mahomes is a whole new animal that they have not experienced before. And then also another big question on the other side, is Patrick Mahomes really going to be healthy enough for this game? And I'm not even talking about the concussion here. I'm talking about his foot injury that really has been overlooked by a lot of people, I think. That really cuts down on his mobility. We saw him hobbling a bit last week, but that's a huge part of his game, getting outside the pocket, making those incredible throws. And so I think it'll come down to, can he still play on his foot, which appears to be injured at this point. I don't know how it's been looking in practice this week, how he feels on it, but that'll be a big storyline to follow. And another one is Harrison Butker, who has been struggling lately. One of the best kickers in the league last year. Special teams can have a huge impact on teams. Just look back to the San Diego Chargers the year that they had the best offense and best defense in the league and still were not able to make the playoffs. So you hope that doesn't come back to bite the Chiefs. And I think that if it does come down to a Harrison Butker miss, we can really call Patrick Mahomes a super unlucky player at this point. Looking back to even in 2019 when Dee Ford lining up offsides negated a game-winning interception for the Chiefs. So I think it's going to be really interesting, this matchup. I think it's a close one, but I ultimately think that the Chiefs are barely able to squeak out a win here.
Yeah, and last thing I'll say, I'm glad you mentioned his ankle injury and just that being a dimension of his game. I think, honestly, if Patrick Mahomes doesn't have obviously his full range of mobility getting outside the pocket, this might be an overtime game. I still think Kansas City prevails, but I could definitely see this going into overtime because that will limit the pass rate for Kansas City, in my opinion. Granted, Andy Reid is an offensive genius. He could probably make some crazy plays like last week when they did a pass play on 4th and 3 or 4th and inches, you know, but I totally agree with you in that Patrick Mahomes is, like, if he's not at full mobility, it's going to be kind of a scary game for Kansas City.
Yeah, and also, I just want to mention, one of the funniest things that happens in the NFL is whenever Patrick Mahomes is able to use his athleticism and he goes on a run, and then just after the play, he gets up and he starts trotting back into the huddle, just sort of like this awkward trot.
Yeah, he really does have an awkward trot.
And he just makes it look like it's nothing, like, oh yeah, whatever, I just did that. I think that that's one of the funniest things that happens in the NFL, and I don't think that we talk about that enough, but that's always hilarious to me.
Absolutely, yeah, he does. He's really weird. And speaking of just funny things on both quarterbacks, both of them have claimed that they've had the strongest arm in the NFL. And there's like a quote from earlier in the regular season that Patrick Mahomes goes, "Josh has an extremely strong arm, but I've yet to see someone have a stronger arm than me." And then Josh Allen responded with, "I'd love to finally settle this." So we're probably going to see some 40-yard, 50-yard bombs this game for sure. So it'll be an exciting game.
Hey, all I'm saying is that if it goes to an overtime and we get to the end of the 15 minutes, maybe we just have a throw-off to decide the winner of the game.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be awesome. It's time to head to the association and talk about some of the early struggles that the Brooklyn Nets have seen in their Big 3 era.
Yeah, so obviously the Nets traded for James Harden, obviously expecting Big 3 success that a lot of teams have seen in the past. But when you look at it so far, obviously they've really only played one game together. But that one game was a loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who aren't the strongest team on paper. So leads you just to ask, what's going on with this team?
Yeah, obviously, like you said, they've only played one game together, and Colin Sexton had a career night, dropped 42, you know, so that can kind of be an outlier. But I really think the big issue for the Nets on the offensive side, I'll get to the defense after this, but offensively, is Tyrese taking 25 to 28 shots. And when you're playing that whole big three out there, Harden, KD, and Kyrie both cannot take 20-plus shots. In the two games since Kyrie's been back, Harden's only taken 14, and both games he only made 6. Granted, he's averaging over 10 assists. He had 12 last night and then 11 in the first time they played together. But if KD, Kyrie, and Harden are going to work together, Kyrie's got to stop taking so many shots and maybe give some to Harden. Or maybe Harden's going to take the back seat of the big three, like we've seen earlier with Chris Bosh and Kevin Love. And then I think for defense, I just don't think DeAndre Jordan is cutting it. He's aging veteran, and they really don't have a lot of big men. I mean, they gave away Jared Allen to Cleveland, who had just totally demolished them last night for Cleveland. They had like 19 points off the bench. And I think Brooklyn's really getting exposed for the lack of defenders that they have or the lack of hustle to defense. And I think another thing is that Steve Nash is obviously a very offensive-minded coach. But if they're going to win the championship, they have to be a better defensive team. And I mean, look at the past 5 NBA champions. The Lakers, obviously, LeBron and AD really anchored their defense and really motivated their guys to play better. When the Warriors were at their prime, they were top 5 in all defensive stats. So the Nets got to figure it out if they're trying to win this year. Well, they are trying to win, but they need to figure it out.
Yeah, I want to just touch on the offense first. and what I think is really the issue here. Whenever we saw James Harden and Kevin Durant on the same floor together, they looked really fluid. They looked really good together. The team looked great before Kyrie came back. And I think that's indicative of what this team needs to be. James Harden needs to be running the point guard for this team. It can't be Kyrie Irving. You can't have him taking all those shots. James Harden needs to be the guy taking those shots. Kyrie put himself into this situation where he had said that he wanted to be the guy in the spotlight whenever he left Cleveland, and he did that in Boston, and it didn't work out. He needs to learn to go back into the shadows a little bit and not always be the guy. He's just simply not good enough for the offense. His play style doesn't function well enough for him to be that. And then, I mean, you look at that defense. It's just, you can't win like that, especially a championship. You're going to have people step up on the defensive end. And I mean, really, right now, it's super concerning seeing as the only real defensive anchor that they have among their best players is Kevin Durant. Outside of that, I'm not sure who you have playing defense for that team. And that's something that's really scary for them going forward, I think.
Yeah, and I think another thing I would recommend for maybe the Nets to do is Kyrie can take as many shots, but maybe run him with like the second unit. Obviously, like he'll start, but make him play more minutes with the second group of guys. Because if Kyrie's not going to take the back seat, maybe be in the shadows, like you said, then maybe he could shine as like a semi sixth man, where he's starting, but when KD and Harden are off, Kyrie's on being the man with the other guys. You know what I mean? I just don't see Kyrie being like, oh, okay, I'm going to go back to being in Cleveland where I wasn't the big guy, I wasn't the star. Like, I think he is too stubborn to revert back to that.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's going to come down to him, I think, to see how successful this team can be. If he starts to put in effort defensively, if he starts to run the offense in a better way, then I think that this team can be super successful. But ultimately, it's going to be up to him where this team goes. Now it's time to transition from the pros to the collegiate level in the college rundown, where we interview our first guest on the show, Oliver Paul.
Now, maybe it's just me, but college was very confusing times.
It's the College Rundown, where we break down all the important stories in college football and basketball from this week.
As Adam said, we'll be talking to my best friend, Oliver Paul. He is here with us today, and we're super excited to have him. He's from my hometown. But first off, Oliver, how's it going?
Going good, man. You know, I just got back to Kentucky. I'm really excited to be back. But
yeah, it's great to have you on the show here with us today. First thing that I want to talk about here is the two teams that have seemingly separated themselves from the pack this season, those being Gonzaga and Baylor, obviously.
Yeah.
What about each of these two teams has impressed you most thus far through the season?
Yeah, so I've had a chance to watch a few games of both teams. Both of them are definitely the clear-cut number one and two teams in the country. Let's start with Gonzaga. Gonzaga's got literally everything you could possibly want in a team. Literally zero weaknesses. Jalen Suggs and Andrew Nembhard are both just tremendous point guards. And it's honestly unfair that Nembhard comes off the bench for him. Like, that shouldn't be allowed. He's so good. Corey Kispert, he's the perfect wing in modern basketball. Just knocked down from three, plays great defense, has great size. Drew Timmy, he's a beast in the low post. Nobody can really guard him. And they, Joel Ayayi, I think. He's perfect glue guy too. Does everything you could possibly ask for. Great passer, great defender. Gets a ton of offensive rebounds, which is weird because he's like 6'3". But he gets like five of them a game. I don't understand it, but he does. Literally, they just don't have any weaknesses. And it's hard for me to imagine any team really beating them. They've already played pretty much a gauntlet of a non-conference schedule. And I think they did that intentionally because year in and year out, people are always knocking them for playing in a horrible conference. And they do. Like, that is a valid knock, but they tried to put those, criticisms to rest by just scheduling a brutal non-conference schedule. And they answered the call in every single game. So that was really impressive. Baylor, definitely the second best team in the country, in my opinion. They've got tremendous guard play, super deep at guard. Maceo Teague, Jared Butler, two studs. But behind them, they've got Davion Mitchell, Adam Flagler, Mark Vidal. All of those guys are really good too. So, you know, they're super deep. And I will say the one thing that I've noticed, at least of every team that's made a deep run in March or won the national championship, they're led by great guards. So that is just incredibly important to making a deep run. And why I think, in all likelihood, and I know this is a chalk pick too, but I think Baylor and Gonzaga will probably end up playing in the national championship game. And I think that's a matchup everyone would want to see, you know, but they're just, to me, the two best teams. Like, they're ranked appropriately for sure.
Absolutely. And I think also a thing to think about is that they were going to play each other on December 5th. But that sadly got postponed. So we didn't get to see a preview. It's obviously why both of those teams are still undefeated. And so continuing on with Baylor and Gonzaga, what do you think is the biggest threats to them right now, to them winning a championship?
Yeah, it's tough to say. And I don't want to pick the number 3 and 5 team, but that's what I'm about to do. I think Texas and Villanova probably present the biggest challenge to them. Texas has been probably the biggest surprise in all of college basketball this season. They're off to a great start. And I think they had a decent year last year, but definitely not. They weren't at this level. But when you look at their roster, it makes sense. They're led by two great guards, Courtney Ramey and Matt Coleman, both veteran guards. Kai Jones is a big man who's been attracting a lot of NBA interest lately. So they've got a good roster, and they play great defense. Shaka Smart's a great defensive coach, so they're always going to be great on the defensive end. And it was really about finding some sort of identity on the offensive end, which I think they've done. So that makes them a very good team this year. Villanova, I mean, with Jay Wright, it's hard to bet against him. He's got a great team every single year. He's just, in my opinion, he's the best coach in college basketball. Him and Mark Few, probably. And so it's hard for me to bet against them. They've got great guard play, too, and Gillespie and Moore, great post play. They don't really have any weaknesses either. They're just, I wouldn't say their best players are on the level of Gonzaga's or Baylor's. So although they're a really good team and they could present a challenge to Gonzaga and Baylor, you know, it'll still be tough for them. But they're definitely one of the contenders for sure.
Yeah, as you said, it's great to see Shaka Smart really finding his footing this year. Obviously, he had that great run with VCU a while back, and now it's great to see that that's translating to a bigger program at Texas. And speaking of winning a national championship, there's always dark horses each year in college basketball who make these deep runs into the tournament. Who are some teams that people may not be seeing that you think have a shot at making a Final Four appearance this year?
Yeah. So they've been gaining a little bit of steam lately in terms of national media attention, but really, really scary team. Nate Oates is a really good coach. He plays a super fast-paced game, perfect for the modern basketball era that we live in. It's a really NBA-style offense. Literally, it's either shots at the rim or three-pointers. There's zero in between. He hates a mid-range jumper, and he's probably smart for that too. It's the least efficient shot in all of basketball. So probably good to avoid that. They're running through the SEC right now. They played my beloved Kentucky Wildcats the other day and just curb stomped us at home. Really embarrassing. But, you know, it really opened my eyes to how good of a team Alabama is this year. And I could definitely see them making a run. If they get hot in March, they are going to be very scary. They're already super hot. But if they keep that momentum going, it's, geez, they're going to be a tough out. And then the other team, Texas Tech, and I know both of these teams are ranked now, but, you know, it's tough for me to see any team outside of the top 25 right now really making some sort of dark horse deep run into March. But Texas Tech is another really good team. Chris Beard, probably the hottest young coach in all of college basketball. It's hard to ever, you know, count him out. And they've got great depth and great guard play. I keep mentioning great guard play because it really is, in my opinion, probably the most important aspect of a good college team. So I think Texas Tech and Alabama, more specifically Alabama, are teams that could make a deep run as dark horses.
For sure. And I think, like you said, obviously you've been mentioning guards a lot. I think even in the NBA, it's just becoming such a guards league. As we usually say, it's a make or miss league, even in college. Granted, you have some big men just being all-stars, or like Zion, obviously he's not a guard, but he was phenomenal a couple of years back. But we're definitely trending toward more guard play for sure.
I was going to say, even looking back, you look back at some of the previous tournament runs, you have these veteran guard plays with North Carolina a few years back, even though they didn't win it against Villanova. Marcus Page was a leader of that team. He was key to their run. And even looking back further than that, somebody like Shabazz Napier, a senior guard
from
a while ago.
I remember him.
They went on an incredible run. Yeah, just
Kemba Walker too. Yeah.
Yeah, having that veteran leadership at the guard position has been huge in college basketball. Even up to now, that holds true, obviously, as well.
For sure.
And I was going to also mention like an example of a big man who like just didn't really be a beast, I guess, in college. He's like DeAndre Ayton when he was on Arizona. Everyone thought they were going to have a huge deep run. And I believe they're out after the first, maybe the
second first round. They lost to Buffalo, led by Nate Oates, the current coach of Alabama. Yeah, that was terrible, a huge upset.
Just that Arizona didn't have any guards, and at the end of the day, the fundamental big man can't win it in college. So, and to wrap things up, I just want to talk about some of the blue blood college basketball powers that have honestly really struggled this season.
Yeah.
So, Oliver, what has happened to some of the teams like your Kentucky Wildcats and the Duke Blue Devils?
With Kentucky, I don't even know where to begin, to be honest with you. I mean, really, you know, to sum it all up, it's a combination of things. With Kentucky, you know, the freshmen we brought in, BJ Boston and Terrence Clark, just haven't been as advertised, and they really lack any semblance of effective guard play. And we've been harping on that already, but I mean, it really is important. And you see it in Kentucky. When you don't have it, you really struggle. And Kentucky's got, and actually, they're a really good defensive team. Like, they're, in terms of KenPom, it's an advanced stat. They're one of the top 25 teams, I believe, in the entire country. So they shouldn't be 4-9, but they are. And, you know, we run a very, I guess you could call it archaic offense, and that might be a little harsh, but that's what it is. And you need those, you need top talent for it to work, and we just don't have it this year. And I really think that's also probably what Duke is struggling with as well. You know, freshmen haven't been as good as that, as good as advertised. Jalen Johnson actually has been pretty good, but outside of him, you know, it's been tough. They're really leaning on Matthew Hurt this year, and he's a decent college player. He's great offensively, but he is legitimately one of the worst defensive big men I've ever seen. Just, it's, scoring against him is basically like you're being guarded by a traffic cone. Like, it's not, there's zero resistance. So, you know, that makes it tough. When he's supposed to be your rim protector, it's not good. Not good at all. So the COVID world, I think, has made it tough on these teams that rely heavily on one-and-done players, just because you really need every opportunity you can get to help your team gel. And they probably haven't had nearly as many this season with all the restrictions and rules and whatnot. So it makes it tough. And that's why a lot of these teams at the top are very experienced teams. But, you know, I would say that's definitely a huge factor in Duke and Kentucky really underperforming this season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been quite the weird season so far. But thanks for coming on, Oliver. It was great to have you. And we'll certainly have you back sometime before March Madness.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Thank you guys for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Oliver, take care, man. We appreciate you.
Thank you. You too.
And with that, we wrap up this week's show talking about the rookies around the NBA.
It's been a blast, but it's almost time to go. We wrap up this week with the home stretch.
The NBA season is starting to heat up, and certain rookies have started to find their stride among the pros. Without a summer league this season, this transition would be very tough for some young players, while others have found a way to overcome this and really began to blossom in their rookie seasons. So Adam and I are going to talk about which rookies we've been impressed with the most. Adam?
I mean, the first one is probably the rookie of the year frontrunner at this point, and that's LaMelo Ball. He's averaging 11.5 points per game, 6.5 rebounds, 6 assists per game, and he really looks like an NBA player out there. For a player who's been in the spotlight since he was, 14 years old, and really had a lot of question marks coming in with not a lot of experience in the NBL in Australia, he really didn't get to play that much. And obviously with his brothers both struggling to make it in the league, I think a lot of people were wondering, is it going to be the same story with LaMelo? And so far, coming off the bench and averaging this stuff, he's been really good for the Hornets. He's not been the most efficient player, but I think that that's super understandable for the situation that he's in. Being a point guard who has very limited experience, is very young. And so I think he's going to continue to grow and really be a productive player in the NBA.
Yeah, my first one was obviously LaMelo Ball as well. And I think obviously all your points are awesome. He's just been huge for the Hornets, and obviously, being the youngest ever to have registered triple-doubles, absolutely incredible. But I think the really big thing that LaMelo has accomplished as a rookie is just bringing exposure to the Hornets. They're just a fun team to watch. Just like from highlights and some games that I've been able to catch, they're just really fun to watch. I mean, LaMelo's throwing alley-oop passes to Miles Bridges. And I mean, you got Terry Rozier balling out, and just they look like a fun team, really enjoyable. Financially, probably the Charlotte Hornets are gaining a lot of traction with just LaMelo being kind of like a shining star on the rise. But overall, yeah, he's having a great season for a rookie. And yeah, he just really needs to increase his efficiency.
Yeah, I mean, great what he's done there. And my next guy is Tyrese Haliburton, who's also averaging 11.5 points per game, but just 3 rebounds, 5 assists. He's been super efficient as a player, though, averaging 50% from the field and I believe 47.5% from 3. And he's been such a great complement to the other players in their backcourt. He can play well off of De'Aaron Fox, where he can be more of a shooter. And he can also play well off of Buddy Hield, where he can be the guy who's the distributor of the ball. So he plays very well to both of them, and I think that's been great for the Kings' backcourt so far.
Yeah, I also put Tyrese Haliburton. I think just his three-point shooting alone is super impressive. I believe they said that his shot wouldn't translate to the league. And I believe you were saying that, Adam, when we were talking about the draft before he got drafted by the Kings, that there's a lot of doubt. But he's obviously proven his doubters wrong. And on a Kings team where they are the worst in defense, he's been a shining star for the most part. I think obviously he can improve on defense as well as the whole Kings organization. So
yeah, hopefully that team can get it figured out on the defensive end. My next guy is probably where this starts to differ from you, and that is Denny Avdija. And it's not just, if you look at his game per game stats, he really has not been very much, but it's more about what we've seen in flashes from him. And that's been really good. Whenever Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook were out for a game earlier in the season, he had a really great game. And I think that just shows that Scott Brooks and the Wizards don't know how to use him at this point. For the most part in their team, he's really just sat in the corner and not done much. But this is a guy who, whenever you put the ball in his hands, I think he showed in that game that he can be a really productive player at the NBA level.
Yeah, I didn't put Denny at all. But I did definitely see, I think when you're referring to the game where he went off, I think it was against Miami. Looking right here, he shot 7 for 15, 46 from the field, but 5 for 9 from 3. And he also had 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. So he obviously has the potential, and Scott Brooks has to figure out how they're going to use him with Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook. But my next rookie is Emmanuel Quickley for the Knicks. He only plays 17 minutes per game. He's averaging 9.5 points and 2.5 assists. But he has been great for their second unit. In the minutes that he's played and that I've watched, just like a really like off the bench energizer type of guy. And I think the Knicks found a nice young piece to put together with Julius Randle and RJ Barrett as they're trudging along. And he's been really great on defense as well. I think the Knicks are number one in overall defensive ratings. So I think it's a great pick by the Knicks, which you don't hear often people say, but the Knicks are trending in the right direction and I fully support it.
Yeah, I mean, he's really, I think, flown under the radar and great for their second unit. And I have one more guy who I came up with, and this is a guy who, not necessarily just because of how he's played, but because of the storylines that were around him whenever he was coming into the league, and that's Patrick Williams of the Chicago Bulls. He's been super efficient this year, averaging 10 points per game, 4 rebounds. And that's solid for somebody who really was doubted as the 4th overall pick. He was criticized a lot because he wasn't even a starter in college. And a lot of people were wondering, why would you take him 4th overall, even whenever you could have drafted him later in the first round? But he's really shown that he can be productive in this league. And I think that that's going to be something big for the Bulls going forward at their wing.
Yeah, I agree that he's definitely been criticized, Williams, for sure. And I think we've said that last week as well. Just the Bulls just kind of need to figure out what the direction is. Billy Donovan just really needs the guys to buy in. And I think Williams is a bright spot, but I think they have a big decision with Zach LaVine, especially if they're going to let him go or trade him and focus really on Williams and Kobe White and them. So we'll see.
Absolutely. But 3 wins in a row, the Bulls are trending up right now.
We'll see.
Now it's time for us to tell you what probably won't happen this week.
General Kenobi, you are a bold one.
All right, let's hear the blasphemy that you came up with.
The Wizards have missed the past 6 or 7 games due to COVID-19. A lot of their players are out, but they just signed Alex Lynn and Jordan Bell to fill some of the roster gaps. But I think when the Wizards start playing again, I think the next 3 to 5 games, Bradley Beal averages 40 points a game. Yeah, I think, I mean, he's already averaging, I think, 34 right now for the season, but he's had a lot of time to rest. And I saw this interview where he said he's been in the gym every single day, is his own personal gym, and he's just ready to get back out there. And Bradley Beal can ball, so I don't doubt that he might have a new career high in these next 3 or 5 games when the Wizards come back to play. Will they win games? Probably not, just because of how poorly structured their roster is, but I think he's going to go on a tear.
It's my St. Louis guy right there. Love to see that. Mine necessarily will not be figured out anytime in the near future and will be debated a lot in the future as well. But I think that Nikola Jokic, by the time he retires, will be considered a top 4 center of all time. I think that there's just things on the basketball court that this man does that are absolutely unseen before. Really, the only guy who's done stuff like it would be Larry Bird, and Larry Bird is considered a top 10 player of all time. I think that Nikola Jokic can reach that level. I think that once the Nuggets start to find more winning ways this year, he will become an MVP frontrunner, in my opinion, and I think that he may even win the award. Obviously, you're averaging a triple-double so far this year. Been super good for the Nuggets, so that's what I have.
Very interesting. Jokic is obviously great, and I think, yeah, maybe down the year that he's a top-4 center. I think offensively he's brilliant. I think to also get into the top-4 conversation, he will just have to mature with his defense. And he's very young, granted. He has a lot of years left to play. But I think that's the next step that he has to take, personally. But hey, we'll see.
Yeah,
I see years that. To come.
All right, what are you thinking about this week?
Yeah, obviously thankful for my pal Oliver Paul coming onto the show for our first guest appearance. Loved his basketball analysis on the college scene. My final thoughts are for the haters of Tom Brady. Obviously, he's playing this weekend. I know everybody hates him. I know his team has cheated. But you got to admire the leadership and just the will to win that this man possesses. He's 43 years old. He's still balling. He's giving all he has, making locker rooms better. He is the GOAT. I don't care what anybody says. He's the GOAT. If he wins number 7, there should be no discussion at all.
I think that you may have been looking at my notes this week because mine also has a little bit to do with this. Mine is that just we need to take a second and appreciate greatness while we have it. There's so many debates on the internet of who's the greatest of all time in whichever sport. We just need to take a second here and just appreciate what we have in the moment that we have it. We have LeBron James right now. We have Kevin Durant. We have Steph Curry, some of the best basketball players of all time. But we go back to debating on how they compare to players who aren't playing anymore. Why do we do that? We have their entire rest of their lives to debate this. We don't need to do that right now. You look at even football, like you said, Tom Brady. Why do we need to debate if he's the GOAT? Why can't we just appreciate what he has done for this sport? Appreciate the magnificent achievements that he's had. I think that that's just what I've gone to this week. It really bugs me whenever I see those debates online, but I don't know. That's just my take on it.
Absolutely. And just to touch on that, like for example, like Drew Brees is either has he officially retired or he's going to. It hasn't been decided yet. But perfect example, Drew Brees had an incredible career, literally changed the game of football. And before we know it, dude, they're all going to be retired. LeBron's going to be gone. And we're going to have to look at a whole new age of NBA stars. Adam, 2 for 2, dude. Back to back. Great final thoughts. You're killing it, man. And that's all we have for this week. As always, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at LeftOutOfficial and leave any feedback you have for us. For Adam Grimm, I'm Logan Davis.
And for Logan Davis, I'm Adam Grimm. We'll see you next week.